If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson. George has the day off today, but John Clements is sitting in with us. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ken.
So far, it's turned out to be a beautiful December.
Oh, the weather is stunning.
And things are going crazy. I mean, yeah. we have been selling Christmas trees like they've been going out of style.
That's a good thing.
Unbelievable. And the trees this year were outstanding. Yeah. They're absolutely beautiful trees. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to one of our employees, a couple of employees the other evening. We were talking about Christmas and what it's like. And I was telling him how, you know, now we bring the trees in, we put fresh cuts on all of them and stand them. And we use a chainsaw, but told him, you know, when I was young, back in the day, we had to use a bow saw.
Oh, and I remember that.
We hand cut every tree that came in the store, and all of our trees get delivered to us now. But way back, I can't remember the name of the Christmas tree company that we used to buy our trees from, but there was a big railroad freight yard down where the main trolley station is downtown. It was a 12th and mm-hmm. Island or something mm-hmm. like that down there. There was a freight yard down there, and after work at night, sometimes I'd go with my dad and we'd take a truck down there and we would pull the Christmas trees out of boxcars were shipped down by rail. And I remember walking around in the boxcars that were just stacked with Christmas trees and it was freezing cold. Oh. And we'd pull the trees out and they'd still have snow in them.
They were that
fresh from up in the Pacific Northwest. God, I wish I could remember the name of the company, because we bought trees from them for years. But yeah, I remember going down there. We would just pick out an assortment of trees and throw them in the truck. And then after the freight yards closed, we used to buy all of our trees from a company called, and I think they're still in business, called Alpine Evergreen. Mm. And they had a tree yard in the parking lot at the fairgrounds. Then somebody still has a tree yard there. It might be mm-hmm. the Pinery. I don't know. But we used to go and do the same thing, but we wouldn't pull them out of boxcars. We would just go up to Del Mar with a truck, and we'd need five, six, seven, seven, or six, seven, eights, and we would pull them out and throw them into the back of the truck and bring them down to the nursery and put stands on them. But it was a lot different. Well, back then.
Well, this crop of trees looks fabulous. They're lush and succulent and very well watered, and they are among the nicest I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They are beautiful trees, you know. And we've got the typical standard ones. We've got the Douglas fir, which has been around forever. Noble firs, Fraser firs have gotten much more popular mm-hmm. over the years, which is kind of a nice in between. Noble firs and Douglas firs. Grand firs or balsam mm-hmm. firs are also popular. Probably the most fragrant of the Christmas mm-hmm. trees that we carry. Although I haven't seen any this year, but mm-hmm. there may be some out there. I'd have to go and take a look. But when I was a kid, or when I was younger, noble firs didn't look the way they do now.
No.
They were much more terraced and they were much thinner. They were not pruned. Mm-hmm. The ones we get in now are pruned and they're much bushier.
Yeah.
But some people like that old.
I like that old style.
That old style.
The first noble fir I ever got. My brother and I bought it for our parents when I was in college. And we just said, we don't like that old kind of tree. Yeah. So we went out, got a noble fir, and it was tiered. There mm-hmm. would be a very big gap in between the branches.
Yeah.
And it was great for displaying heavy ornaments.
Yeah. That's what I remember as a kid was the big gaps between mm-hmm. the branches. I mean, they were basically just seedling trees, mm-hmm. But they were beautiful. And we've started bringing a few of those in again. The other thing that I remember, We don't offer flocking in this store anymore just because there we did so few of them. It wasn't requested that much that we don't offer it here. They still do it in the San Diego store. But we don't do it up here. But when we would flock Christmas trees for people, people would come in and they would pick out their Christmas tree and they would bring their Christmas lights with. And then we would install the Christmas lights on the tree. And then we would go through, and if they were the, what was it, the C2 lights, the
C7s,
smaller incandescent, the tiny ones, but the smaller incandescent bulbs that you screw out, I still can't believe we would do this. We would go through, put the lights on the tree, then go through and take out all of the light bulbs and stuff paper into the sockets.
Wow.
Then we would flock the tree. Then we would go through and pull all the paper out of the sockets and put all the lights back in. Because if you flock a tree with lights on it, you're going to cover all the lights up. And for the tiny lights, the little teeny lights, we would mask each one of them off. And then after everything was dry, we would go through and pull the masking tape off of the lights.
It's about $500 worth of labor these days, right? To do that. Oh my gosh. The most expensive tree in the world.
It was included. I mean, that was part of the service that we provided. But it was a lot of work. And then people wanted colored flock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the pink ones.
The pink and
there's something
pink
just
and blue
wrong and, about yeah. that. Just wrong.
Some people liked really heavy flock, and some people. When I was flocking trees, the ones I always thought looked the best were the ones that just had a light frosting on the tips that mm-hmm. looked natural.
Mm-hmm.
Some people wanted heavy flock, and then we used to have 50-pound bags of glitter just big chunks of mica. Basically, mm-hmm. and after the tree was flocked,
probably good to breathe that in too, right? Yeah, probably nobody's using any respirators.
We would just take big handfuls of that stuff and sprinkle it all over the trees, it had that kind of icy, shiny finish to it.
Speaking of trees, you know, one of my favorite subjects is the cut trees are great. I love a cut tree; they're beautiful. I like the smell, but there's nothing quite like getting a living tree, planting it on your property, and then having it visit you, you know, this Christmas celebration that goes on for this life of a tree indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And some of my, I'd be curious to know what your favorite living Christmas trees are. The one, when I had a house on Tecolote Canyon, I bought from the Point Loma store, I don't know, 35 years ago or so, a giant sequoia and planted that on the slope in Tecolote Canyon that became the most stunning tree.
It's a pretty
absolutely
tree.
Absolutely gorgeous. And they do well in San Diego.
Yeah.
And there's, in fact, a very large colony of giant sequoias up on Palomar Mountain.
Oh, really?
Hundreds of them.
Where's that at?
Yeah, it's up toward the old Ranger Station. I'd have to get the exact coordinates.
Okay.
But I'd love for people to go see them because they're probably 50 years old, 60 years old for the most part, and they're becoming very beautiful trees. And,
interesting.
You know, coast redwoods don't do well for us.
No, they just can't get enough moisture.
No, they're problematic, but a giant sequoia does very, very well. So that was, in the past, one of my crowning glories of living Christmas trees was that one. And then I also purchased here at this store a few years ago when my mom passed away. I thought, okay, I'm going to get a Christmas tree that will also become a memorial tree. I like to do that. And I bought a Pinus monophylla, which is pinion pine.
Yeah, pinion pine, where they get for pine nuts.
You also get this beautiful byproduct of pine nuts from these. I planted it at my property in Julian, and it is a stunner. It is such a gorgeous tree. Thrives with very little water. They're beautiful. And one of my favorite memories of a vacation to Colorado about a dozen years ago was they had a roadshow for a company called New Mexico Pinion Coffee Company. And what they were doing was they were taking pine nuts, adding it to the coffee, and roasting them together.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's delicious. You can actually get it at Trader Joe's. They no longer roast it with the pine nuts, but they have, I think, the pinion nut oil that they put in it.
Okay.
But I fell in love with that coffee, too. And it is really a gorgeous tree.
I will have to try that when my son gets back from Palo Alto this this Christmas. And you can buy it over there
at all the Costcos in New Mexico and Colorado. But it's the best coffee I think I've ever tasted.
I'll have to try that. Yeah. I'll have to try that.
So what's your favorite,
you know,
living Christmas tree?
One that was extremely popular for a long, long time and then just completely disappeared. I didn't even realize that it had disappeared until I was looking for one a few years ago, was Norfolk pines.
Yes.
And we couldn't get Norfolk pine to save our life. Whether living Christmas tree, indoor houseplant, outdoor landscape tree, didn't matter. They were just, nobody was growing them. They have now started coming back into favor again. But Norfolk pine, a single Norfolk pine will make a beautiful living Christmas tree. They'll grow beautifully here in San Diego.
Oh, they do.
They get huge if you let them go. But they are, it's a really neat tree. It has kind of that tiered look to it that, the noble firs do. And it's very easy to grow.
They are easy.
As a matter of fact, Melanie and I were down at, Liberty Station last weekend, and we were down wandering around. We went down to do some Christmas shopping and see what was going on. And right in the middle of Liberty Station, just to the, I always get messed up in Point Loma. I think Liberty Station runs east west, but just west of where Stone Brewing is, in the middle of Liberty Station, they have a huge Norfolk pine.
Yeah, that's near Solari.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And it's all decked out for the holidays. Wow, nice. And it looks beautiful. As a matter of fact, I think the Ocean Beach Christmas tree this year is a Norfolk pine also that somebody cut down in their yard and donated to the Ocean Beach.
That's so cool.
Ocean Beach Christmas celebration. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with John Clements. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more Garden Talk right here. Don't go away.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements. George has got the day off today. We were talking about living Christmas trees before we broke, and we were talking about the Norfolk pine at Liberty Station. And, you know, it's interesting, one of the trees that the Navy used, they used several of them at Liberty Station, but also down at the naval base, I think it's the training base that's behind Driscoll's Wharf. They use other ericaceas. Norfolk pine is ericaceae heterophylla, but they use other Norfolk pines.
Columnaris, the Cook pine.
Columnaris. And then some of the big ones, the Bidwilli and Araucanas.
Right.
And as I think, is it Bidwilli that's the Bunya?
Yeah, Bunya.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this on the show in the past. There were some at the Botanical Garden,
yes.
But they have several at Liberty Station. When you come in the Lytton Street entrance, you're forced to go to the right by the golf course and the Loma Club. And then there's a traffic circle there if you want to turn around and go back out. And in the middle of that traffic circle are huge Araucaria Araucanas. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're massive, massive trees. And I remember where Corvette Diner is now, that was the old NCO club.
Right.
And when McMillan took over the project, they approached us. They wanted us to move into that property and move the nursery to that property, which we seriously considered it, but in the end it didn't pencil out, but it was a beautiful location. Mm-hmm. But I remember we were down there looking at those trees, and there were actually cones laying on the ground under the tree.
Yeah.
And I told the rep that we were dealing with from McMillan, I said, you need to fence this off.
Right.
You don't want people picnicking under these trees because someone's going to get killed.
Oh, they can weigh 20 pounds. Yeah, it's like a bowling ball.
It's like a bowling ball.
Yeah.
And they never did fence it off, but I've noticed even the last time we were there, when we drove in that entrance, there's about an 18-inch tall chain that goes around around those trees, supposedly to keep you from walking underneath of them. But yeah, if you're ever at Liberty Station over towards the Lytton Street exit and you see those giant trees, don't hang around underneath of them. Not a good idea.
At the Botanic Garden, we would have to close down that area of the rainforest where the Bidwilliis were for 4 to 6 weeks, and they would drop, and it's like a basketball.
Yeah.
And then they hit the ground and they explode.
Oh, yeah.
And the seeds are huge.
They're big.
Like 4 inches long, maybe 1.5 inches across.
Yeah.
And you can eat them, which is
I didn't
crazy.
Know that.
I made pesto out of those one time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which was really fun. And somebody else made bread out of them. And there's also a nice stand of those on the east end of Balboa Park on the 25th Street end of things. There's a stand of a half dozen that are really beautiful. You know, and some of my favorite Christmas trees, living Christmas trees, I think, too, think outside the box a little bit. And there's a lot of nice small specimens at the nursery, both Point Loma and here. Deodar cedars. You know, that's one of my favorite trees in the world. You know, in Latin, it means the tree of God. I mean, it's just beautiful. And there's actually a row of 130-year-old specimens up in Altadena, the Christmas Tree Lane, that are all old Deodar cedars.
Orange Avenue in Coronado.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Is the same
and
thing.
Also, same thing there.
Yeah. And my grandfather planted those trees
on
Orange Avenue.
Oh, that's
from
so cool.
From what I have been told. Yeah.
That's neat. So, you know, and think also Cuyamaca cypress, one of the rarest trees in the entire world. In situ, there are only 40 of those left in the wild.
Really?
Yeah. The last cedar fire, there were 200 specimens, 160 of them were wiped out. So you could have one of the rarest trees in the entire world in your yard. Buy it as a Christmas tree and then plant it out later in your garden. And they're a stunning tree. The bark is beautiful. And my friend Ann Sturman has one in her backyard.
I will have to look at that.
And there's one at the Botanic Garden. It's just gorgeous.
I think Moosa Creek Nursery has been growing.
They
those.
Have been.
I
yeah.
think we've had them in stock. I'll have
yeah.
to go and
yeah,
take a look.
Yeah, you usually will have them. Yeah. I planted several on my property in Julian that they're becoming gorgeous trees. Takati cypress is another really nice
That's
specimen.
A nice one.
Atlas cedar. There's a number. Actually, I bought here a 2 years ago, maybe, a Serbian pine that you'd brought in. There's some really nice stuff from Iverde that you can get. Some black Austrian pines that will do
well. Yeah, the black Austrian pines are really
out
are really
east
nice.
A little bit. So if you're in Ramona, Julian, Palomar, think of some of these really great specimens that you could enjoy for the holidays and then put out.
Yeah, one of the other ones that was pretty popular, and I don't recall seeing any this year so far, Colorado blue spruce.
Yes.
Was always very popular. It's a beautiful tree, absolutely beautiful tree. Doesn't do that well around here, unfortunately, but the nicest Colorado blue spruce I ever saw in San Diego, and I don't think it's there anymore, was in the, because I think most of the garden is gone, was in the conifer garden at the wild animal park, now the safari park. That conifer garden was one of my favorite places in the park. It was, you walk into that conifer garden and you would swear you were in the mountains. It smelled like the mountains. They had that small river running through it. Just an absolutely beautiful place. And they had a Colorado blue spruce there that was probably somewhere between 20 and 30 feet tall. And it was perfect. Wow. It was absolutely perfect. But I don't think it's there anymore.
No, you know, they've been changing
a lot of things around.
The other thing, I love Christmas. I mean, I can't get enough Christmas. And so one of the things I was doing in the store today, you know, it's trying to find those small gifts, the stocking stuffers or a gift to a friend. One of the things that you can't get on Amazon anymore, right? Because when I do consultations, I tell people all the time with citrus, you really need to get the Bug Blaster nozzle. Put that on the end of a wand, and then I call it the Merlot treatment, Ken. I get a glass of Merlot and go out and just sip your wine while you sit there, put on some nice music you like, and just hose down your tree. It takes care of 75-80% of most pest problems on citrus. And the only place I know of that you can get those Bug Blaster nozzles right now is at Walter Anderson Nursery, $12 a piece.
Yeah.
Every citrus class I ever teach, I also love to push the Siphonject, which you can make a 5-gallon bucket full of solution, add water to that, and then add 1 cup of fish emulsion fertilizer, 1 cup of liquid chelated iron, and zinc, and then just drench your sweet little sister's trees with these things. And it makes them turn lush and green, and they get rid of chlorosis. And that is another favorite thing of mine for a stocking stuffer, about $22-23. Honest to goodness, we sell out every time I teach a class on that. And I, you know, Mary, is it okay to say this? Mary Rodriguez, mm-hmm. We had one left. I was teaching a class and our friend Mary Rodriguez came up and I said, well, I only have one more of these, and she literally during the lecture came up, snatched it out of my hand and said, that's mine. So we love you, Mary. That's a great stocking stuffer. And there's beautiful houseplants right now. One of my favorite amaryllis, Samburu, is in bloom. Man, that's a stunner. If you gave that to somebody as a gift, they'd just think you're wonderful.
Yeah.
So, any favorite things you can think of for some ideas?
You know, you talk about the one that we used to carry, when I was a kid, the one that we used to carry was Siphonex. It was a brass nozzle. When we used to feed at the San Diego store, now things turn over so quickly, it's rare that we have to fertilize anything. But when we would fertilize down there, we would use the Siphonex. But it slows the water down so much because to get the Venturi effect, you have to drop the water down to about a stream about the size of a pencil, and it really restricts the water. So it took forever to do feed large areas. So my dad's uncle, who worked for us at the time, he took two of them, took a Y adapter for a hose bib, ran it around, put two Siphonexes on it, and then hooked it back to another Y, and so it had a single outlet for a hose.
Oh my gosh!
And so it doubled the output. Wow. So you could fertilize faster. But I remember my dad and my grandfather sending me out in the yard with a 5-gallon bucket and a gallon of grow power. Wow. And they'd say put grow power into here, fill the rest of it with water, start watering, and when it's empty, fill it up and do it again. And I would just spend all day out there.
And didn't your uncle also, was it your uncle? Somebody at the old store in Point Loma, was the Peter's Honey Fig?
Yeah, it was not Peter's. It was Corky's. Corky was the nickname. His name it was Lawrence Anderson was his name, but Corky was his nickname.
But he was the one that found that.
Yeah. He found it in, it was growing near where my great grandmother's house was, which was, I thought my dad said it was on, the house was on Greenwood, which is over off of Hancock Street, west of Camino del Rio. There, that's where her house was. And I'll have to ask my dad about it, but as I recall, he found that tree growing, and then it's such a fantastic fig. He started propagating it.
Wow.
And then he had a big one at his house out in East San Diego, and we would get cuttings from it. And we would propagate them from time to time. And then it got to the point where we couldn't keep them in stock. So we made a deal with, a licensing deal with Monrovia Nursery, and they're the sole growers of the tree now. When they have them.
Yeah.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. So don't go away.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here in KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements today. And we've been talking about Christmas trees and things like that, some gift ideas, you know, and poinsettias. You know, now is the time now is the traditional time to get poinsettias. And, you know, that's a really interesting crop. I know one of our friends and one of our suppliers, Dana Groot from Florabundant Nursery, he grows a lot of poinsettias every year, and he grows other stuff during the off season. But, you know, poinsettia, to grow a crop of poinsettias takes so much time, and you have to dedicate the space to do it. Man, that's a risk I would not take.
Yeah.
Because if something goes south, you only got one shot at it a year. And you've taken up a huge amount of your space that you could have been growing something mm-hmm. else that mm-hmm. was going to turn over. So my hat's off to him. He grows just absolutely beautiful poinsettias. Mm. And I think he might be the only local grower that still grows them the way the Ecky family did them,
yeah.
where it was a single bloom and a single stem.
Right.
Most of the poinsettias that you see out there, and we carry them too, because they're very popular and they're very inexpensive. But to get a lot of color on them, they will pinch them. It'll be a single plant, and they'll pinch it several times so that it branches, and then each of those branches will form a flower. But the flowers don't get as big mm-hmm. or as spectacular as the way the Ecky family used to grow them.
Yeah.
And we used to sell Ecky poinsettias like crazy.
Yeah.
They were our main supplier, and it's really interesting. It's a shame that they're not there anymore, because it was always mm-hmm. something to go up to the ranch, go to ranch pickup
yeah.
in December. If we were running low, we would send a truck up there to pick stuff up, and to go up and see the greenhouses just full of them. And then shortly before they sold everything off, they had a field day. Mm-hmm. And they invited customers up to see what they were working on, and they had some unbelievable plants in the works.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely gorgeous, unusual colors, sizes of flowers. It was just amazing what they were working on. And unfortunately, I don't know that any of that stuff continued when they sold everything off. But just an amazing the legacy of them alone is just amazing. And, you know, I kind of hate to say it, but how do you put it? They were a victim of their own good fortune in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that developed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started selling cutting. Mm-hmm. One of their main sources of income was cuttings
right.
that they would sell to other growers. And then it just became such a huge commodity that the novelty of some of the stuff that they were doing just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
So
and now all those cuttings are coming from South America.
Yeah, well they had a big operation in Guatemala.
Oh, in Guatemala, yeah. Yeah,
that,
right.
They sold everything. They got rid of everything.
Well, my friend Andy Easton, who used to own Dos Pueblos Orchids up in Santa Barbara,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's so expensive to be in business in California. Water costs, fuel costs, land costs. Yeah. I mean, it's worth so much more as condos and strip malls.
Yeah.
That his operations are all in Colombia now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a sad thing, but the original Ecky poinsettia growers were in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard.
Yep.
And I have some great old photographs where it was all just field grown outdoors, and mm-hmm. they were sold as cut flowers.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a dollar for a big bunch of, you know, Forbia pulcherrima before mm-hmm. they did the hybridizing and all that. And you know what was the doom of their success in Hollywood was Hollywood.
It was Hollywood. I remember when we would go up to the ranch, you'd go into the office to write the check for the invoice, and they had a big black and white photo on the wall, and it was a huge field of mm-hmm. poinsettias in bloom, and there was a giant sign on the side of the road from where the photograph was taken, and it said "Welcome to Beverly Hills."
Wow!
So
yeah, it's a different animal up there now, and so that's what prompted the move to Encinitas.
Yeah,
was that the land was too valuable because Hollywood studios were buying it all up,
mm-hmm.
and so they came to. If I recall correctly, I think they were paying $30 an acre.
It was cheap.
Yeah, for Encinitas property that. Well, that set the whole Ecky family up for life.
They moved to San Diego about the time that we opened. I think they moved
about in
28, 29, somewhere
right
around there. But yeah, I was having lunch. This was a long time ago. I was having lunch with Paul Ecky III one time, And we were just talking about the business and how things are changing. Mm-hmm. And he told me at that time, he said, don't let anybody fool you. He said, if you're in the nursery business in Southern California, mm-hmm. you're in the land business.
That's right.
And yeah. he was not kidding. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that everything changes. But the land value has just gotten so high. It just doesn't pencil out. There's a higher and better use for it doing something else, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking Christmas, those final stocking stuffers. Mm-hmm. One of the things, of course, people could do, buy a gift certificate. Come into the stores, buy a gift certificate, and then people could redeem that for roses come January or bare root fruit trees. Any garden person. I was actually at a Morgan Stanley dinner last night. And a fellow that I met sitting next to me listens to the radio show and has mm-hmm. for years. And he said, I can't wait till bare root season. He said, it's like, that's really when Christmas happens mm-hmm. is when I get the initial run of bare root fruit trees. And so I said, Robert, get ready because you better get them quick this year because they're going to be gone because it's a smaller order. And there's limequats in the store right now, which is a mm-hmm. great citrus. I guarantee you, any gardener that you got a limequat for would love you. That's a terrific piece of fruit. One of my favorite stocking stuffers, a Dram 400 water breaker nozzle.
Mm-hmm.
That will, was it Jeff Foxworthy says? That episode of Walker Texas Ranger changed my life. I love that line. Well, I'll tell you what, as a gardener, you get a water breaker nozzle and you'll feel like that changed my life. I love them.
I use them all the time. Yeah. I don't water anything in my yard without it.
I don't either.
It's an outstanding little garden tool.
Yeah, $15 thing, and somebody will remember you every day they water. Is then that what Christmas is about? Yeah. Those sweet memories, and so that's a great present. And there's Cymbidium orchids in bloom right now in the store that are just gorgeous. And orchids don't have to be hard.
Cymbidiums are pretty easy. The other one that's surprisingly easy, although people don't think they are Phalaenopsis.
Oh yeah.
If we have orchids that go out of bloom, we mark them down and sell them cheaper. And we had a couple of Phalaenopsis and I was thinking, I had an idea for doing something with a couple at the house. So I picked up a couple that were out of bloom, took them home, set them out on the back patio. They don't get any direct sunlight. They're in the shade all the time. I water them every once in a while when I think about it. They're reblooming. They're sending off new flower spikes, which they will do, mm-hmm. and they're thriving and they're fine. And they get neglected where I'm at, but they're doing very well. I'm curious to see what they would look like if I actually took care of them. Mm-hmm. So, but that's another one that's really really easy to grow. You can't be afraid of them. And like most orchids, or at least most orchids that are available. That are available in the markets, people baby them too much.
Yeah.
They're tough plants. When you look at the natural environments that they grow, and same thing with bromeliads, mm-hmm. they grow in very, very harsh, mm-hmm. Harsh environments. And I think people baby them too mm-hmm. much. And you just,
sometimes
you need to just back off a little bit and let them go. Probably one of my favorite things that would make a great stocking stuffer are Felco pruning shears.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely the best pruning shear.
I have a pair that I've had for 36 years.
I have a pair that I've had for about 20 years now.
Yeah.
And I tell
people, you can replace the parts.
Well, that's what I tell people when they're looking at you, because they come in and they look at the Felco shears and then they look at the Corona shears. And Corona shears, it's a good shear, but mm-hmm. it's significantly less expensive. But I always tell people, I said, if you don't lose it, mm-hmm. you'll never buy another shear.
Or somebody doesn't steal it.
You will never buy another pair of shears because there mm-hmm. is not a single piece on that shear that is not replaceable, mm-hmm. down to the red plastic shrink wrap handles.
Yeah.
So all of it is replaceable. And I challenge you to find a better cutting shear.
They're great.
Yeah.
Here's a great gift idea. I like to double duty things. So you can get these little small Christmas trees, of course, pines, but my friend Cheryl Toll owns the Pinery and they ship almost 2 million trees around the country. And they make a lot of them out of lavender and some out of rosemary. Mm-hmm. And you could turn that into a topiary after Christmas.
Yes.
So you use it as a Christmas tree, then just transition, put it in a big, beautiful pot, put some annuals around it. And that is beautiful all year.
Yeah, it's a really nice plant. It is amazing. You know, the Pinery Tree Yard is off of Highland Valley, off of the north end of Pomerado Road. And when you drive through there, it's incredible, that operation, the amount of stuff that they are moving through.
Well, there's the cut tree part of it, and then Cheryl's a different section, just the living plants. But I mean, mm-hmm. the size of this place is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge place.
It's really a cool operation.
Yeah, and not too far from there, a little known secret for people: if you want to go to a pumpkin patch in October, they have one set up. It's before you get to where they're growing the Christmas trees, but there's a pumpkin patch there. And it's not nearly the, I won't say nightmare, but
the crowds. Anyway,
it's not nearly as crowded as Bates Nut Farm is. And we used to go to Bates every year, and then it just got to the point where it was just too much.
Yeah.
And that was even after we found out the real secret to Bates Nut Farm is to go up by Lake Wolford and come in the back way.
Oh, the back way. Yeah.
So. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Annis along with John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements. George has the day off today. You know, one of the things that we were talking briefly about, some of the citrus that's coming in, we had mentioned the lime quat, sour orange. Another one that's somewhat popular. I know we had a tree in our yard when I was a kid. And as a kid, I used to eat them all the time. Not so much, but Calamundans.
Oh,
Calamundan lime. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Tiny. Mm-hmm. They're not very big at all, but man, if you like lime and you like sour, that's a good one.
It has such a very interesting flavor. It's very complex. You know what I like to use it for? Put it in my margaritas.
I was going
to
say, I
squeeze that juice out and add it to the margarita with a little Cointreau and is that good?
It punches it up. That's a good one. You know, another good one, but it's just not in production anymore, unfortunately. Durlings used to grow it, but they don't grow it anymore. It's a Rangpur lime.
Oh, yes.
And I had some friends of ours moved back to Florida, and they had a Rangpur lime in their yard that was in a container. And they said, when they moved, they said, "We're not taking the lime with us. If you want it, you can have it."
So
I have a Rangpur lime. As a matter of fact, it's got a ton of fruit on it right now. So if you want some, I'll get you some after the show.
I'd love some. We'll have you to dinner and bring me some limes. We'll do a trade.
But when we were talking about citrus, I think, well, I know, I didn't know after being in this business for over 40 years, lemons are not a true species of citrus. It's a hybrid.
Yeah.
And they believe that it's a hybrid between a fingered citron and bitter orange. Mm. But bitter orange is not a true species either. That's a hybrid between mandarin and a pomelo.
And a pomelo, yeah.
Which it's really interesting. We found George last week when we were talking about it, he found a chart that kind of shows how it all goes together. And like I said, lemon is a cross between citron and bitter orange. Bitter orange goes back to mandarin and pomelo. Pomelo goes down to grapefruit, which is a cross between pomelo and sweet orange. It creates grapefruit, but sweet orange is a sport or comes from mandarin. And then mandarins just become mandarin. So between Citrus medica, citrus reticulata, which is mandarin, and citrus maxima, which is pomelo. That's where a lot of these things come from.
Wonderful hybrids.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Just absolutely amazing.
Well, one of my most precious memories, I had a house on Tecolote Canyon, and I had 50 producing mature fruit trees. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in that property, I had 8 varieties of mandarins. And my 2 favorite were Kishu. I had two near a koi pond that I had. And my grandchildren were visiting from Colorado at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And they were in the backyard, and they had just made themselves almost sick because the kishus were hanging by the hundred. Mm-hmm. And it's like a little golf ball, but it's this punch of the most intensely flavored sweet mandarin you've ever seen, seedless. And when the peel literally falls off that thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's not a commercially available fruit, because as soon as you break the seal of that peel, that thing will mold in about a day or two.
Yeah.
And so it's really a backyard fruit, but I'll tell you, there's nothing better than a kishu. And they sat there and would just throw them in their mouth as quick as they could get the peel off. And I bet they ate 50 apiece.
My grandparents had a Satsuma mandarin in their backyard, and it was a really good one as well. And I remember as a kid, well, and my dad had one at his place too. And the skin just falls off of them.
Yeah.
And I have a couple in my backyard, and right around Christmas time is when they start to ripen up, and they're really sweet. They're seedless, which there's a lot of really good mandarins out there that have outstanding flavor, but they are loaded with seeds. Mm-hmm. This one is Satsuma is not. Mm. And they're easy to grow. The tree doesn't get very big.
Right.
It's naturally a smaller growth habit. But they're outstanding. And the other one that I remember that my grandparents had was they had a big Valencia orange in their backyard. And I remember in the summertime when the Valencias would ripen, I'd be hanging out in the backyard doing yard work with my grandfather, and we'd go over and he'd pull oranges off of the tree, and then he'd pull out his pocket knife and peel them and hand me a peeled Valencia orange. And God, the flavor of Valencia orange, I think, is so superior to navel oranges. It's not even funny. But the drawback was they had seeds in it.
Right.
But now there's seedless Valencias that are out there. And Valencia is typically what they get orange juice from.
Yes.
And I remember my grandmother used to fresh squeeze orange juice when those were ripened. Mm-hmm. It's outstanding.
Oh yeah.
It is outstanding.
Well, I've written extensively on raising citrus and on good selections. And I really think that every single garden should have a midnight Valencia orange.
Mm-hmm.
Seedless. The flavor is very complex, and it just has these notes of flavor that you don't get from many other Valencias. And the thing that I love about Valencias too, that will hang on the tree for up to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Japan, they sell at a very, very premium price what they call a 2-year orange.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an orange that has been on the tree for 2 years. And you talk about sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, the flavor of a 2-year Valencia is like nothing you've ever tasted. Mm-hmm. It's just wild. And you can only do that if you have one in your backyard. And so it's really a citrus that I recommend to everybody. You really should have a midnight Valencia. Great to have the navels, but a midnight Valencia, I think, is a must have.
Mm-hmm. When Mel and I first met, she was working for the San Diego Daily Transcript when that was still around. And her boss at the Transcript, his family has a large ranch, citrus ranch up in Palma Valley.
Mm.
And it was interesting. He and I were talking about it one time, and he said, all of the citrus that they produce, none of it is sold in the United States. Wow. They ship 100% of it to Japan.
Mm.
And he said what his family specialized in growing, and I don't remember if it was navel or if it was Valencias, but they grew the biggest, most perfect fruit that they could grow.
Mm.
And he said they could get a premium for it in Japan. Wow. So they shipped 100% of their crop to Japan.
Wow.
So it wasn't available here.
Interesting business strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting.
Well, you know, there's so many good citrus that people are unaware of too. I would almost crawl on crushed glass if I could get a Valentine pomelo. That's one I had in my garden at home. They're hard to get. If you can ever find one.
We've had them.
You've had them. In fact, the last citrus class I taught, there were, I think, 3 or 4 that were available in liners. And there was almost a fist fight at the end because I said, listen, you want to get a Chandler pomelo. That's another unbelievable piece of fruit. Mm-hmm. It's just the flavor is amazing.
And, it's interesting.
Yeah, they are a winter citrus too. So right around Christmas, January, they're at perfection. And a Valentine is, well, of course, around Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Little heart-shaped fruit, bright red inside, and flavor unlike anything I've ever tasted. Mm-hmm. And I said, and by the way, when I was running through the nursery, I found three. I brought them to the table. And I said, if I had one citrus, I would want a Valentine pomelo. And you should have seen the people literally get up out of the seats and almost fight for those things.
Yeah. Pomelo is it's an interesting fruit. It's probably got the thickest rind of anything that I've ever seen. But the flavor is very interesting. It's not it doesn't taste like a grapefruit. Mm-mm. And it doesn't taste like an orange. It's a very unique.
Yep. And it doesn't taste like a mandarin. I understand. No, yeah. It's actually a hybrid of those three things together. Orange, pomelo, and grapefruit, and also a mandarin.
Yeah.
And, and tango mandarin is also a very complex hybrid like that. Mm-hmm. So, I'm all about grow the stuff in your yard you can't buy at the store. Yeah. That is really, for me, a paradigm that if I can just buy it at Ralph's, why do I want to grow that in my yard? But I want things that are unavailable.
Yeah.
And that when I bring somebody a big, beautiful pomelo or a bag of quiches, they lose their minds. Mm-hmm. This is what that we're all about as home gardeners.
Yeah. That's Roy Wilburn philosophy too.
Yeah.
Don't grow onions. Don't grow garlic. Yeah. You can get that stuff's a dime a dozen in the grocery store. Grow the unusual things that you can't get in the grocery store.
Yeah.
So that's a very good rule of thumb to follow there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, citrus, I've always been fascinated with citrus. I think they're beautiful trees. And I remember my former in-laws lived in Palma Valley, and we'd take the kids up there. And when the orange groves are in bloom, that fragrance that wafts through the air up there, it is just absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And the whole Rubiaceae family is a very interesting family. True curry is actually in the Rubiaceae family. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you can't get it in Southern California anymore because of the quarantine.
Asian citrus psyllid.
The Asian citrus psyllid. But we used to sell it. And we used to sell the other, it's one of the Murrayas. I can't remember.
Maria paniculata.
Is it paniculata?
Yeah,
and then there's another.
Orange jessamine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also related to citrus.
Yeah. And we used to sell quite a bit of that. But it's just, it's not available anymore.
Not anymore.
And what was the, there was a big, there was another tree. The Cape chestnut? Is that what I'm thinking?
No. That one is not really related to the citrus. But rutia is another. That's actually a little Australian, very cool little ornamental. And it's very closely related to citrus. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the flower, it's a very short little plant. Mm-hmm. Joe and Julie Walker up at Oberverde grow those.
Oh.
You can get this rutia. Very neat little plant. It's super cool.
I will have to look.
Is it rutia? Okay. I'm trying to remember. Anyway, gorgeous little thing.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with John Clements. We're going to be back next week talking to Randy Sipchak from the San Diego Spider Society. So tune in to find out everything you needed to know about spiders. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back next Saturday.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew, or want to learn more about the show, or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. Or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.